क्रिस्ट जयंती रेडियो।
हेलो एवरीवन, यू आर लिसनिंग टू अमला जस्टी। अ वेरी गुड मॉर्निंग टू ऑल आर लिसनर्स। टुडे वी हैव विद अस मिस्टर चिके फ्रैंकी, हु विल एनलाइटन अस अ लिटिल विद हिज रोल एज अ जर्नलिस्ट एंड एन ऑथर। फॉर ऑल आर एस्पायरिंग जर्नलिस्ट एंड स्टोरी टेलर्स, हियर्स अ बिट ऑफ अ ट्रीट।
सो आई एम गोना स्टार्ट विद योर मोस्ट ग्लोबली appreciated book, that is Lives of Great Men, Living and Loving as an African Gay Man. Now, how would you define your role as a diasporic writer?
I hadn't really thought about that. I don't think I went into it thinking of myself as a diasporic writer. I just wanted to do good journalism, even in memoir where, you know, you're at the center of the work, but there's still other people's lives that I'm writing about, that I'm chronicling, and how those lives intersect with mine. So it wasn't so much about anything else other than doing a good storytelling, good research. And I guess being that I live in New York, I am a diasporic writer, but it's not something that I actually gave much thought to, because I wanted the work to be good above anything else. I wanted the work to stand on its own and not be colored by who was writing it. I just wanted to do a good book.
Thank you. All right. So the book speaks about the complications of living in a society where culture dictates your every single move. Now, could you explain these complications and their broader effect?
So because you are, if you've grown up in a particular society, whether it's Indian or it's African, Nigerian, whatever it is, that puts the community at a pedestal, and the community above all, and the village above all, it is very difficult sometimes to think of individual need. And I think that is where, for someone like me, who grew up in West Africa, but really became a man in New York City, I've had the experience of always thinking about others and others' need first. And then going to university in America, where the focus was on creating my own skill set to make me a better person, a better worker. These things can be complicated, but there are times when you have to be a better person before you can serve the community as a whole. So I think of that, if for me to be good to anybody else, I have to be the best version of myself that I can be.
Thank you. Now, coming to the context of India, we recently cut down Section 377, which criminalized homosexuality. And the one thing that we've noticed is that even before and after this legislative move, the law only affects the people of that community. So, and this is the case with a lot of minority issues. So what would you think is the functional responsibility of a majority in a situation like this?
Those people who are LGBTQIA, they do not live in a vacuum. They have brothers and sisters and friends who love them, who are straight, and see their suffering and suffer with them. So really, when you have something like decriminalization, you're helping everyone who's in their lives, because these people don't have to live inauthentic lives. And the people who love them, who are their friends, their brothers, their family members, the people that are their community that have not rejected them, they don't suffer anymore, knowing that their person is going to be okay. So I always say that a rising tide lifts all boats. If societies are going to thrive by having equality, you can't have equality for some and then not have for the others. So I always talk about, if you are someone who believes in LGBTQIA rights, then you also have to believe in gender equality, because one doesn't work without the other.
So being a community, both LGBTQ and the Nigerian community, they've both gone through unnecessary and undeserving struggles. One would expect fundamental understanding within a community of this sort. What are some of the unaddressed internal conflicts within such a community? One such would be patriarchy.
Patriarchy affects everybody. You know, sometimes they don't even want to play those roles, but it's just what you have to do to survive. And it's good to live in an era now where we can call things by their name. You know, we can talk about patriarchy, we can talk about toxic masculinity, we can talk about women making accusations that are real and very real, but also point out that there are times when these things are used as a sledgehammer. And that is the good thing about this moment we're in, because we can call things by their name. But at the same time, you have to be in a situation where you are living your best life. And sometimes that means pointing out things that are in your community that are not good. You know, it does not make you a traitor, a sellout, or any of that stuff. It all comes back to a holistic storytelling. If I can hold up the mirror to myself and point out the flaws in my society, I should be able to also point out the things that are great about us. And when those things go hand in hand, everybody is lifted up. So patriarchy, male domination, toxic masculinity, these are not things that are exclusive to people of color or to queer people. No, these are things that are happening in even the societies that see themselves as the most evolved among us. They still have these issues.
Being a Nigerian-American journalist, what were some of the challenges that you faced as a journalist?
There are lots of challenges when you're a journalist, because at the time that I was reporting, I was writing about communities that felt like mainstream media didn't care about them. So that was already sort of like a strike against me, because if I'm going into communities of color and they believe that my publication's against them, I had the weight on my shoulders to try and say, your story is not just important and it should be told, but you should tell it to us. And so the way I sort of tried to get around that was to play up my own personal identity and say, you should tell it to me. I know you don't like who I work for, but I will do a good job with it. I personally will not betray you. It is better for you to have a seat at the table than not at all.
So would you say that journalism today is more perspective driven?
I don't think so. I think there are people who are doing different things. I think some people have a perspective, but people just want to tell good stories. I think the majority of journalists want to tell good stories. They want to highlight untold stories. They want to make a difference. But sometimes you have very loud voices clouding the airwaves, and so it's easy to miss the good work that is being done all around the world.
So when developed countries with their established news agencies look on developing country stories, most of them are not positive. How would you say that can change in the future?
Well, that can change if people who are in countries where that are the recipients of this stuff stop caring what the West thinks about them. That telling your own stories and writing for your own people, those kinds of stories done by journalists at home should not be given second shrift. You know, if you have something that's great about your society, you should toot your own horn, but at the same time, you have to do it while also talking about the things that are not so great, because that's the only way that you avoid being labeled as someone who's pushing an agenda. But if you're in a place that is termed a developing country, and the only information that you see out there in the world about your society is one that's negative, then it's your responsibility to counter that with the positive things that are going on in your society and not say that those are boring, because we get that a lot. There's people doing good things. Give them the spotlight.
So from one developing country to another, we share a similar colonial past. How far do you think we have come from being a post-colony to a decolonized state, both Nigeria and India?
There are citizens in both places that need to focus more on looking inward and not always thinking that everything from the colonial mistress is the standard. And this is what I try to fight against. I think that the standard that we should have for ourselves is one of excellence. And excellence can come from anywhere. Excellence can come from, you know, the person down the street who's never been anywhere but knows that they work hard and they do the best work. I'm more concerned about people and individuals. And I think that we have to keep reminding ourselves that we can be the best at anything. So here in India, for instance, there's a lot of people that I know from my country, Nigeria, who come here for medical treatment. Many people across the African continent come here. That is a step in the right direction. But it's wonderful to know that people can come to India and get first-class healthcare of the highest levels. And Indian journalists need to be the ones screaming that story.
I agree. So again, sticking to the colonial past, there's a very interesting thing about history, and that is the role of colonizers in establishing sexual binarism and instilling homonormativity. How would you describe the role of colonizers in a situation like that?
Well, the colonizers, as we called them, they've gone. It's not their responsibility for them to make our societies better. And the thing that bothers me is that very often we look at them as the high standard. But when it comes to this issue of sexual diversity among us, it's very hard for us to say, no, our history shows us that we had diversity going back, blah, blah, blah. I don't think it's their responsibility to make our societies more accepting of us. We have to do that ourselves. You know, so that's where I just feel like, you know, the colonizers came, they did their thing, but many of them have been gone for over 50 years.
You have worked as a journalist and as a nonfiction writer. What are these challenges you face in balancing these two? Because one is subjective and the other is objective, and you have to find there's a thin line between the two.
Well, I just, you know, which is the guiding principle that I use in my work, is that I just try to do the best that I can and try to have a very high standard for myself. I'm obviously, you know, not maybe it's not obvious, but I really am interested in doing another nonfiction book, and another nonfiction book that has perspective, that has a point of view. The challenge is doing it well. The challenge for me is really making sure that when I step out with either a piece of journalism or a piece of just regular nonfiction, or even if I step out with a piece of fiction, that it is the best work I could possibly do and that nobody is seeing the other side of me in there. So if I have a piece of fiction, I don't want anybody thinking that this is a piece of fiction written by a journalist. It's just a good story.
So on a lighter note, Africa is a big community. And for the first time last year, there was a commercially successful movie which was primarily based in Africa, that is Black Panther. The image of Africa in Black Panther is different from all other representations of the community. We see a developed nation. We see a nation that's ready to help the others. So how do you think films function in attracting a global audience at a quicker pace than literature?
So I think you don't always get to have a luxury of seeing yourself or a version of yourself, even if it's a fictional character, on the big screen to the whole world. It's, you know, that's why I think Black Panther was such a phenomenon, because it's beyond rare that people would say, let us invest $1 billion project in a film that the cast is all black. It's all about Africa. It's all about African culture. Obviously, there's one or two scenes in London, but it's also treated like colonizer. Like, they get to be in this movie, but very little. You know, there's one scene in a museum that's supposed to be in London, and that was it. The rest of it is like in Korea or in Wakanda. So that itself is very, very rare. I think in literature may not have the kind of instantaneous global audience that a big film will have, or even a small film. But the thing about literature is that it seems to me anyway that books will always sort of like be there.
Contrary to the Black Panther, you recommend a movie, The Wound, in your previous interviews, and you encourage the audience to watch it. Now, these are two very different movies, and both show Africa in a way that the world hasn't seen before. Why do you think it's important to see the same continent in its most interior and most ethnic way?
Because it's truth. Because the version that we have of many of these places is it's one dimensional. It's just a part. And I don't think you can truly get to know any of these countries or any of these societies if you're fed a steady diet of one thing. So I always say there's power in storytelling. And if you're going to know any of these places, you should see all their stories, not just the ones that some people want you to see, which is why I say watch The Wound if you have Netflix. Watch Lionheart, which is another movie out of Nigeria. You know, you don't just make a decision on a group of people by one outlet.
While the mainstream media neglects minority community issues, I truly believe that Frankie's vision of young storytellers changing narratives will inspire our listeners to bring about the change required. Thank you for tuning into KJC Radio. This is Amala Justy signing off.